More dirt and Sprague.
Where are you going? And he's like, I'm going bowling. I just started laughing because I'm like, of course you're going bowling on a random Tuesday night.
Sounds like
night.
A great Tuesday night.
It's breakfast time with Dirt and Sprague.
Now, do you have your own ball?
I have two balls.
Starting your day with a big cup of dirt and a little splash of Sprague.
Your spare ball, you don't want it to hook as much, so it will go straighter. And then the strike ball, you want to be able to get some crank on that.
Heat on that.
When you hit the pocket, you get big pin action.
Well, everybody wants to hit the pocket. I mean, come on now.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague here, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday to you. We got a lot to get to on the show today. If you want a bingo card for listener responses I've gotten so far today, you ready? Let's see how many boxes you could check. I was being mean to Shador Sanders. That's coming. Stop being so rude to Shador Sanders. Nobody said that about Tua. I wonder why that is. Mean to Shador Sanders. Damian Lillard sucks, and I'm an idiot. Josh Allen never gets criticized, and I think that's where we're at right now. That's our bingo cards. If you got those on your bingo card, you can mark them. It's been a fun 2 hours. We got two more hours to go. Ryan Hartland's going to join us coming up at 8:45. We'll talk a little Oregon State camp with him. And what's been going on down in Corvallis, and excited to have him on to get a check-in from somebody who covers Oregon State on a daily basis. We will have the release less than 1 hour from now. It will be official. The AP poll's coming out. Who are the candidates this year? I will remind you of the teams in this category from a year ago, because you know somebody's going to do it. And also, I have a list of the teams who have the longest consecutive streak of ending the college football season unranked. And who is most likely to end that streak this year? Some of the teams on the list honestly surprised me. And I'll give you the list and see how many you can figure out. And then who is likely to end that streak? All of that still to come over the next 2 hours of this fine radio program. Let's dive in, though, to the National Football League. It was preseason week one, fully wrapped up. Everybody has played. Not every player has played, but every team has played. And there's a lot to take away from the opening weekend of preseason football. I got a lot of stuff in my notes. But I think we got to start. Are you ready for the next Tom Brady?
He took with the, you know, I thought he read with his feet. You know, I good job overall. And I thought even on some of the keepers where maybe the primary isn't there, he attacks with the ball up. You know, even on the first one that he had where he ends up finding Max Clair on kind of the late down flat, but hit a couple low crossing routes. You know, and I thought he kept the ball in play. You know, that's the biggest thing is keeping the ball in play. There was one situation that we'll have a great learning op on a third down where, you know, they kind of played a man coverage. We ended up throwing it to the flat to Max Clair. I got to see. I think the pocket might have allowed him to be able to progress. But otherwise, it was a really good day for him. He just felt like he was in good command, and it was cool to see a good smile on his face.
Look, tongue-in-cheek on the tease of that. That is Sean McVay talking about Ty Simpson, who played for the Rams this weekend. Obviously, guys, safe to say the most controversial first-round pick of last year's draft, right? Like some disagreements about where certain guys went. Nobody thought Ty Simpson would go maybe even in the first round. Like, I remember Sprague and I debating that. I took the over of quarterbacks just because teams are usually desperate, and I figured somebody would move in the back of the first round and take him if he was available, not wanting to wait around until Friday to see if he was still there. He went way higher than anybody imagined, and it was a team who nobody picked to go get him, and it was the L.A. Rams. They went out and got Ty Simpson, and so his debut was certainly going to be watched, and the way he plays in the preseason was certainly going to be watched because sans an injury, this is the only opportunity we're going to have to see him all year, right? Like, Stafford is old. He could get hurt. The back could go out on him again. Nobody knows what the future holds for him and the Rams this year. But different than a Mendoza debut, right? Mendoza, I don't know if he's going to start. Seems like Kirk Cousins will get the job at first. We're just spinning our tires until Mendoza takes over. It's only a matter of time until he's their starting quarterback this year.
You want him to be where he feels most comfortable. He's got command of things, understands the game plan, and now he's ready to just play. He's not thinking about too many things other than, all right, we've gone through the film study. I know the script for the first 15 plays. I know what our general game plan is. I know where they're vulnerable, where we want to exploit our, okay, let's go. When he gets to that point, then they're going to turn him loose.
Yes, and he will start at some point. We will get to see him
play. I think
it'll
be sooner than later. I'd be surprised if we're late in October and it's still Kirk Cousins.
I agree with you completely there, because that would mean Kirk Cousins is playing good football, and I'm not willing to gamble on Kirk Cousins playing good football this year.
Or that he hasn't been you know, folded in half yet.
Sure. Or his own defensive lineman hasn't beaten him up and sent him to the hospital, because that happened in practice a week or two ago.
Yeah.
The point on Ty Simpson, though, is that this is, again, unless the staff, this is the only chance. He's a 13th overall pick in the draft. He's going to be one of these guys who sits and waits. Is it 1 year? Is it 2 years? Is it I don't know how long it's going to be.
Yeah.
But we're not going to see him other than preseason football. And so this is kind of all we have to react to. And I will say, like, I went and watched the highlights. Somebody cut up every throw that he made, so you can watch all of just his plays.
Yeah.
Because the rest of the Rams stuff didn't really interest me that much, nor the Chiefs and their backups, because Mahomes obviously wasn't playing and all that. He looked really sharp. He looked really good. He looked calm. He looked in control.
Calm, comfortable.
His feet weren't jumpy in the pocket. Like, he seemed to have a good grasp on the offense. And what I will say is this. I certainly understand the controversy of the pick. I also think that the adage of the best time to look for a new job is when you have a job,
yes,
applies to quarterbacks. The best time to try and find a quarterback is when you don't necessarily need one,
right?
Because you're not making moves out of desperation.
No, and you're not going to pay a premium.
No, and some people might have thought the 13th overall pick was desperation. That's fine. My counterargument to that would be, what more could they have done this offseason to put themselves in a win-now
mode? They fixed their holes in free agency and trades.
Right.
They got McDuffie. They got Miles Garrett.
Right. Defense solved. And, by the way, Aaron Donald worked out again this weekend, so that's continuing to grow in speculation.
You can tell Donald wants to do this.
Yes.
One, he doesn't want to have to go through all of training camp. And
no.
Two, McVay would never make him go through all of training camp.
Well, but sit out the first month if you want. I don't care. Just come back whenever you want.
So, yeah.
Pick
so now
choose.
It's about... You know, can he go through and do stuff and then recover and come back the next day and come back the next day?
Right.
How much of that, you know,
yeah,
what
where's his
those
body's
guys
at?
Have to go through when it counts and is for real?
Yeah, it's one thing just to be in incredible shape. We all know he's in incredible shape. Football shape and withstanding the physicality of a season.
When they talk about,
different.
Yeah, when you play in the trenches and however many plays, it's a car crash on every play. And
right.
When you then have to come back, so week 9, and he's trying to get out of bed on Tuesday, what does it feel like, and how motivated is he going to be to fight through it?
Right. I will say, I don't know if there's a, in recent memory, I'm trying to think, like, this certainly ended up being Mahomes in Kansas City, where he was very fortunate to go where he went.
Yeah.
You land with an all-time offensive-minded head coach. You have one of the best vertical threats we've ever seen in the NFL, one of the most explosive playmakers we've ever seen in the NFL on the outside. And, oh, by the way, you have a tight end that some would put in the conversation on the Mount Rushmore of the position. So you have an all-time head coach, an elite weapon on the outside, an all-time tight end, and then like, it just was a perfect combination of things of where he was drafted. And this isn't to take away from Mahomes' talent. It's just the idea that as he's learned the hard way the last couple of years, it takes a village. You lose that weapon. Your tight end's now fat. Like, all of a sudden, it's a little more challenging to win games and push the ball down the field for as good as Patrick Mahomes possibly is. And so Ty Simpson was the luckiest man alive at the end of April when he was taken where he was taken, because that very easily could have been a draft pick where the Rams don't take him there. The Jets had 2 first-round picks, and they say, you know what? Let's do it. Let's take our quarterback. And now you're a New York Jet with Aaron Glenn as your head coach. And I would feel differently about the longevity and the viability of your NFL career as opposed to going to L.A., where you certainly need more seasoning. Because remember, with Ty Simpson, man, he played 1 year of college football. As a starter, 1 year as a starter. And this was the thing when Dante Moore decided to come out, was that the guys who make a minimal amount, like, I can't remember what the breaking point is. It's like 20 starts or whatever. And guys who are below that list usually don't pan out very well in the NFL. They're just not experienced enough. And so he's in that category technically. What alleviates that concern for me is where he's at, man. Like, you got weapons everywhere. You have a brilliant head coach. You have an organization who's willing to overturn every stone in order to get better, and you're not going to be asked or had the pressure of the world thrown on your shoulders in the next likely 2 calendar years, and you're just going to sit and learn and have the opportunity to grow and develop. And so who knows what to make of one preseason game. We've also seen guys who have done this in the preseason, and we kind of joke about it, and they go on to have great careers. Dak Prescott is a great example of this. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget Dak Prescott making his first preseason start. And like, who's this third, like, what was he, 4th-round pick, 3rd-round pick, wherever
somewhere
he was,
there, yeah,
out of Mississippi State, and it was like, damn, he looked pretty good. And then it's like, wow, it's preseason. And now look up, 10 years later, he's still the starting quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. He supplanted Tony Romo and kicked him to CBS. So he looked great. He looked comfortable. He's in a great system. And I felt coming out of college, I, you know, I wasn't too high or too necessarily low on him. I just tried to provide the context of, at Alabama, their offensive line was dog-ass in terms of protecting him, and that led to them not being able in any way, shape, or form to run the football. And when you have those two things working against you as a quarterback, that is context that matters to me. Do you play in an offense where an offensive line is going to give you 5 seconds on every snap? And do you play in an offense where you have the ability to run the football for 6 yards a pop and defenses don't know what the game plan against? And if the answer to those questions are no, I can be critical of you. I can feel a certain way, but I also have to allow that conversation in my head of, Was their failures all on him?
Yeah.
When they got drilled, was that on him? When he's getting smoked in the SEC title game and he has no time to throw the football, is that on Ty Simpson? Is that his fault? Or is it the fault of the offense around him not delivering the way that they needed to? So if you're a Rams fan, man, you were already feeling great. You have Super Bowl or bust expectations. You added Myles Garrett and McDuffie in the offseason. Oh, now, by the way, the guy you took 13th overall had a nice little debut for himself.
Had a nice little debut.
Nice little debut.
If something happens to Stafford, you're like, okay, the wheels may not fall off.
Yeah, maybe you got something there. He's certainly more enticing than, is Stetson Bennett still there? Is he still a Ram?
Yes.
I think he's still hanging around down there. So that happened over the weekend. The Bills played their first game in their new stadium. Did you see the highlights of this game?
I did not.
Okay. The takeaways.
What did we hear about all the obstructed view seats?
Yeah, that's certainly going to be a complaint, and rightfully so. Like, how do you design a stadium in 2026 and have obstructed seat views?
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here? Josh Allen played a significant, like, he was out there for a minute. He was running around, scrambling around, making throws like it was week one of the regular season.
Is that necessary?
Not really, but I also not going to knock it. Like, he didn't get hurt. I'm assuming it's him wanting to play thing. We got some new weapons,
well,
DJ Moore.
Sure.
Like, let's get some reps out there.
But it's week one of the preseason.
I get it. What's your sliding scale of being cautious? I imagine he's not going to do that in every preseason game.
I would hope. Well, he's not playing the third preseason game no matter what.
So he's you got DJ Moore in there. Let's get some reps in. Like,
so usually, yeah, this coming up week two, I'm going to guess, is where for teams that want to play regulars,
yeah,
this is the one.
This, for the majority of teams, yes. This likely will be the game.
How long they play, that's just differing philosophies on what your particular situation is, how much you trust your first teamers to, you know, protect themselves, take care of themselves. Do you have new coordinators, new head coaches, that sort of thing versus, you know, we know what the Rams are going to do. You know,
there's
if Stafford gets out there at all, it might be for a series. And
I also think, like the injury concerns of a player like Josh Allen, for everything that he has and has not accomplished in the NFL, has been
relatively
incredibly durable,
healthy.
Right? Like, it's just not a concern. I think he knows how to protect himself. He didn't, to my knowledge, take any massive hits in that game. A few takeaways. The only takeaways are really from the stadium on the Buffalo angle of this. Them playing on grass is going to take a while to get used to. Their new stadium is grass, which, good for them, by the way.
Fantastic.
It's the way it should be. Football's meant to be played on grass.
Yes.
That was in the Ten Commandments from God, I'm pretty sure. It's hard to explain. Their old stadium, the seats were so close to the field that it felt like when you watch it on TV, it's like they were right there, and it was this intimidating atmosphere.
Because they could throw things and they reached
sex
the
toys
field.
And snowballs, and it's right there. And maybe that was why, what you just hinted at, why they did what they did. The angles that the camera watches, and look, it's Buffalo. They're still going to be breaking tables, and the atmosphere will be solid.
Oh, Mafia will be out in force.
When you watch a game, though, and it's like a nice day, and you just see the grass field, it feels like you're watching a game in Jacksonville. You can't see the stands at all from the TV camera angles. There's like a mile on the sidelines each way before the seats begin.
Okay.
And it's changed the aesthetics of how Bills games will look. Now, I'm sure they'll still feel the same, and maybe to your point, they moved it back because they don't want sex toys on the field or be players getting pelted with snowballs. Can't blame
I'll
you there.
I'll have to go back. I'm sure.
It was weird. It threw me off for a bit. I'm
curious.
The
NFL Network's going to rerun
all
of those things all the time, so I'll have to go back and check a few.
I felt like I was watching a game of them playing in Jacksonville, and it felt very
weird. I saw
weird.
Some highlights from the Falcons. Did they get new turf in that?
I don't know if they did. I'm assuming teams who put the grass in and then put turf back in because they were a World Cup host site.
Yeah.
I'm assuming.
That looked like new turf.
New turf, I'm assuming. But them playing on grass, I was like, whoop. Oh, good for them, though. I like
good
that. A couple other notes from the weekend. Look, I got some more of the NFL bags pretty big. There's
a
lot to talk about.
We got a couple of minutes.
This one, play a fun game with me for a second here. So Jeremiah Love, we talked about him. This to the idea of playing in preseason maybe went too far. He had, I want to say, we talked about this on Friday, 14 touches, I think. Ended up with a high ankle sprain of the game. He got banged up, left the game, high ankle sprain. They are now hopeful that he will be back for week one against the Chargers, but that is not a guarantee, okay?
No.
Play the fun game with me. This is the first 11 games of their schedule, okay?
Yeah.
Not knowing when Jeremiah Love is going to be back. Hopeful for week one, Jacoby Brissett. Are you ready for this?
This is about as brutal as...
On the road at the Chargers.
Yeah.
Home against the Seahawks.
Good luck.
At the 49ers.
Yeah.
All the way on the road, 10 a.m. kick at the Giants. Maybe.
That might be the weakest team they face.
Home against Detroit.
Ouch.
At the Rams.
Oof.
Home against the Broncos.
Yikes.
At the Cowboys.
But we'll see if they have a defense or not.
TBD. On the road at Seattle.
That's not going to go
You play
well.
Them twice in the first nine, the defending champs twice in the first 9 weeks. Oh, by the way, the Rams are the favorite. You play them twice as well. You come home and play the Rams in week 10. And then you go on the road to Kansas City. Those are your first 11 games.
So they got four
of
their five division games before Thanksgiving.
And the hardest division in football, mind you, where none of those games are a gimme because they are the sore outlier of a team who's incompetent.
Then it's Commanders and Eagles.
Then
they get their bye. Right. So there's no bye in there.
There's no bye in there till the end of the season.
Then they get the Jets, Saints, Raiders.
then it eases up, right? The Jets is a manageable game. The Raiders might probably not very good.
One of those three games will be their first chance to actually be a betting favorite. The Jets at home. Who will probably have an interim head coach at that point.
Yes, very high likelihood
that
happens. Who
knows what their quarterback situation is. You're at the Saints, but the things are looking up in New Orleans.
Right.
And then you get the Raiders at home. Mendoza should be playing by then.
I mean, the year's over. Everybody's mailed it in at that
but
point.
But they're going to be playing hard because
you would think.
They're trying to develop it for next season.
Right, build in for some momentum.
You end the season with the 49ers at home, but who knows what San Francisco may need for playoff seeding or whatever's in play.
Right.
They might go the whole season without being a favorite.
Yes, they certainly will not be in any of
home
those 11 games.
Home against the Jets
is the first
after
chance.
A bye
is your first chance.
Is the only game I could see there where
minus
they,
two and a half.
Based on, you know, right. Assuming nothing catastrophic, you know.
Yeah, there's a balance here. Like, I will defend. What's the floor's name? What's the first one in Arizona? Do you remember? It's not, it's a LaFleur brother.
Mike.
Is it Mike LaFleur? Here's what I will say. They're getting a little bit of heat for playing Jeremiah Love, how much they did. And I certainly noted it on Friday. It's one of those things, like, we do this with pitchers in baseball. And I don't know. I'm just more of the idea of, like, he's a rookie. You want to get him some snaps. Like, it's 14 touches too many, probably. If he doesn't get hurt, though, is anybody saying, what are you doing?
No.
It's just like, we do this with pitchers, and it's like, you got to get him out after 85 pitches because it's all, like... Okay,
oh, stop it.
There's no guarantee he's going to get hurt.
No.
Even if you are restrictive with him, he might still end up getting hurt. There's no exact science here, and I just lean more on the idea of experience is going to help you in the long run. Let Love get his kind of feet wet, feel what it feels like to see NFL defenses. You wrap him in bubble wrap for all the preseason, roll him out for week one. You got a bad team and a bad offensive line. They're going to be, you know— crowd in the box on every snap. I don't know. That to me is a tough ask. So maybe 14 touches was too much, but I'm not going to kill him for playing their first round pick and seeing what he's got in the preseason. And I imagine their goal was to get him some snaps, high bulk volume, ease off him as the preseason goes so he's ready for week one. He just happened to get hurt, man. In the long run, Jeremiah Love will be fine. I feel like he's going to be a stud in the NFL. Will it matter for the Cardinals? I don't know. He might be the next Bijan Robinson or, you know, Saquon with the Giants. Time will tell on that front. But he might not be able to play in week one. Their opening game is against the Chargers, and their first 12, 13, 14 games are just brutal this year. Some more in the NFL, including one guy, talk about injuries, who thinks he's going to be ready potentially for week one. One player earning first-team reps. How about that update out of an NFL roster? So we'll talk a little bit more about the NFL and what transpired over the weekend next on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. I do have a new bit of fun with audio we could get to in the final hour that I stumbled upon.
Got to be careful with this.
I mean, it's just a, it's a delicacy.
Okay, well,
some people would say.
God bless the beaver.
There you go.
How hard did you laugh when you listened to it? Pretty hard, huh? Pretty good. We'll get to that coming up at some point.
Still had my producer hat on going,
I don't know about that one. Eh, what the hell? We'll let it fly. Brand man, don't worry. Trust us, all right? Jesus, take the wheel. We'll see where we go from here. Somebody bringing up the fact, what if Ty Simpson has two rings before he even plays a game? It would be pretty wild if that were to happen. That's a good way to start your NFL career, man. Just winning a couple of rings, no pressure whatsoever, just hanging out on the sideline, taking some snaps and blowouts, playing in the preseason. That's good life. If you can get it, it's good life. Let's stick in the National Football League. How about Devin Witherspoon becoming the richest corner in NFL history? That happened over the weekend.
There you go. John Schneider keeps finding money.
Yeah, I mean, they hinted at that. They had a sit-down with him on Hard Knocks for the first episode, where I was like, he was like driving into practice, and he was not a... to my knowledge, Seahawk fan can correct me if
no,
I'm wrong.
No, I don't think
he was not holding in or anything. He was still
so.
A full
he
go
was playing, which indicated no. We're talking. We'll figure it out.
Let's get this done, man. Let's get this done. Yeah. Took longer than I think either side imagined. McDonald kind of talked about that. He addressed it in his post game press conference on Saturday, because I want to say the news came out Saturday of the extension, the day
it was
of the
either
game,
Friday, late Friday or Saturday. Saturday.
4-year, $132 million extension includes over $101 million guaranteed. That makes him the highest paid cornerback in NFL history. And if you remember what just happened in the running back market, how somebody set a record and then it was broken.
Yeah.
Guess what's going to happen in this market? Christian Gonzalez is still waiting for his contract. And that's like a, it's like a game of chicken. The agent wants the guy to be the record setter, but then are you the next record setter? Or are you? It's so stupid that we do that. But I also get it. Get your bag. He deserves it. He's been a great corner for Seattle. One of the main fixtures for them defensively. So it makes a lot of sense, right? Like, they had to make some cap sacrifices this offseason knowing this stuff was looming.
Yeah.
Kenneth Walker, Super Bowl MVP. Like, nah, man, not in the budget, right? You let a lot of your depth defensively go.
The biggest mystery, I think.
It's massive for Seattle
for
this year.
For the Seahawks is how is that rushing attack going to come about to balance things out for Darnold?
It made Darnold's life easier. They ran the ball a ton. And oh, by the way, they killed you a play action pass because their ability to run the football. And so it's a $1 million question for Seattle this year. I don't have a lot of question marks for them defensively, primarily because of who their head coach is and his expertise and the pieces that they have on that side of the ball. Like, I know they lost.
They
some
should
depth.
Always
be, fine.
Be in a football game unless they turn it over a ton.
Yes, agree completely. And then it's, can your offense do enough
then
to win at that same
clip? Can you get touchdowns and points when you absolutely have to?
Yeah, having JSN, the offensive player of the year, certainly helps in that regard. But not a surprise there, Witherspoon. That was in only a matter of time until they get the deal done.
Yeah, it was just working out the details, making sure it fit in their cap situation and whatever else they are planning to do.
Right, because there's more to come here. Watching what they do, look, I don't want to put the cart too far in front of the horse. Watching how it plays out for them and Sam Darnold is going to be really interesting.
Because he's got this year, and then is it a team option or a player option next year?
Let me double check.
Because it was a three, was it a full 3-year deal, or was it 2 years and an option?
Let me see. It's a 3-year, $100 million deal. Is there an option on either side?
Or is the third year not guaranteed?
There is an out.
After year two?
After year two, which they're not going to do, unless things just go...
Unless the player can
Either way, that's true. I don't know if it's a player or a team. It doesn't say. It just says potential out after 2 years and $69 million. It would be $19.2 million in dead cap against a team.
Okay.
So that makes me think it's a team side where they have an option there for year number three.
I would think with everything else set up, so unless something catastrophic happens this season, I would imagine he would play out the contract.
I would tend to think so, too. But as we see this go on right now in Tampa with Baker... That seems to be heading for a divorce because the two sides couldn't come to an agreement. Baker wanted top, you know, 5-6-ish quarterback money. Going to be the ass of Darnold? And are you comfortable paying him $50 million? If he wants, let's say the next 2 years run out, you don't win another Super Bowl, but you're good. You're in the mix. You're still a good playoff
Get
team.
To
you're
an
close,
NFC title
right?
Maybe game another or something.
Right. And he says, pay me $50 million a year. You do it?
Well, I guess the bigger question is, how much more does the salary cap rise, and what percentage of things is $50 million when
it'll
gets,
keep going up? There's no doubt about that.
Time
right
to sign it up.
His cap hit in the last year of the deal, 2027, is $41.9 million, which is not bad for a starting quarterback.
$50 million on a two-year deal?
Two-year deal, yeah. Is he willing to accept a deal for that short a time? Here's what I will say about John Schneider.
I think it's more about the length of the deal at that point
than the money.
Than the dollar amount.
I mean, you would think that you could have ways to cook the books where you get more of a cap or a bonus, yeah, signing bonus up front, cash bonus and all that, so the cap hit brings down a little bit.
A big signing bonus, but your base salary is, you know, moderate over the 2 years, and I'll give you a 2 year deal, and the second year, you know, we'll see what happens.
But you get
the big signing bonus up front.
Right, give you cash up front. His cap hit, by the way, from last year to this year, it's a big jump. $13.4 million last year, $37.9 this year.
Okay.
So that's part of the reason some of this stuff happened for them in the offseason, right? Where certain guys got to go. It'll jump up to $41 next year. John Schneider is one of the best GMs in the NFL. He's like to win two Super Bowls with different coaches, quarterback combo, like that is so rare in the NFL. Puts him in pretty rarefied air. His biggest strength is identifying and knowing when to move on from quarterbacks. Yeah. I would argue the idea of moving on from Russell Wilson at the time was like he had won the only Super Bowl there. It was controversial. Like, you're moving on from this cat and he wants more money. Okay.
Yeah.
Dude, it turned out to be just one of the best decisions we've seen in the last 25 years in the NFL. Instead of giving that guy an extension that he wanted. And the same thing goes for Geno Smith. Like, Geno Smith had a nice little moment. You found a guy on the scrap heap. It worked out. It had run its course. Yeah. And it wasn't working the way it needed to. And he was, you know, complaining about not having enough money and all that. And you move on and you get Sam Darnold. And so no matter what they end up doing, if I were a Seahawks fan, there'd be a level of trust there of like, he's going to figure that out. I just find that to be a very interesting question for them 2 years from now, because there's no questioning he's a good quarterback. He was awesome in the NFC Championship game when he most needed to be. He also,
So did he discover something? Did Darnold discover something in the process of going through all that now he can apply, and we can see more of what we saw in the playoffs game to game in the regular season?
Yeah.
Or is it still going to kind of be a little inconsistent, and every once in a while we're going to get that
three-pick game? Like,
turnover.
Where did that come from, man?
Yeah.
Like, that's the funny part about him is that he won a Super Bowl, and you cannot discredit the impact that he had in that, because without him playing at the level he did in the NFC title game, they don't win.
They don't get there.
Their defense got shredded by LA. That was a high-scoring game, man. It came down to the wire, and their defense eventually got the stop when they needed to at the end of the game. They needed to go point for point with LA, and he found a way to do that. Yeah. And then you look at, I'm not going to criticize him for a Niner, like, he didn't need to do anything. And that game was over on the opening kickoff.
Well, yeah, sometimes it's, hey, we need to possess the ball, turn clock,
burn clock, know your role,
and just not give, if we don't give our opponent that many possessions, they can't score more than 17 points or something like that.
His numbers on the end of the year, 25 touchdowns and 14 picks.
14 picks is too much.
That was third highest, I believe, in
the
NFL.
So you need to shift it. If he gets to 30 and 10.
Yes. No doubt in my mind.
If he gets to 30 and 10.
No doubt in my mind.
Then, okay.
But if it's two more years of that.
But if it's two more years of 25 and 15.
It's funny. I don't know. It's an interesting looming question for them. It's certainly a good problem to have, right? You could just win a damn Super Bowl. So you're feeling
fine
either way.
I feel like Sam Darnold is reasonable. Like,
he's reasonable, huh?
I don't know about his agent.
Yeah,
but
that's the thing here. He might say okay. But also, if you're him and you played on, this is part of the thing with Baker where I get you want the money.
I mean, he already got you know, he had a nice rookie contract.
Yeah, he's top five pick.
And then I forget what he made in
He didn't
the
make
Vikings.
Much at all.
It wasn't much.
No.
So
he was a, no.
If he was smart with that rookie contract, and I don't get the sense he lives a flamboyant, extravagant life. It's not to say that he doesn't have nice things and a nice house and a nice car, but I don't see him being foolish with his lifestyle, at least that I'm aware of.
Right.
So, yeah. Does he need to break? Does he have the ego to need to break the bank to prove something with the contract?
Yeah.
Or can he say, all right,
I'm in a great spot making $30 million a year.
Let's
keep this thing going.
Let's go to 45.
Right.
You know.
It's a good problem to have. I'm
would
living
he
large.
Rather have 45 guaranteed for 2 years? Or, no, I want 55 up front, that sort of thing. And they'll say, okay, wouldn't do that with sinus bonus. But then the second year, we're Yeah.
Yeah. We're putting the cart in front of the horse a little bit there. It's just an interesting question going forward for Seattle with me. Of how do they handle that? Because he certainly was good in big moments, but he led the league in turnovers. So there's like, there's each side of the coin that you can look at, but he won a Super Bowl. And so that, you know.
But I think this year.
He takes cake for people.
This year for him, I think, one, we don't have to worry about the naysayers of can he do it or anything like that.
No.
But I think his ability to elevate him to a different level or to erase all of the bad memories and put it on, that was his circumstances with the Jets. That if he has a clean and takes that step and he's in control.
Yes.
Because they are going to have to throw it a little more. The passing offense is going to have to be a bigger part of their success than it was last year.
And that's a fair ask. You got good weapons. The offensive line is solid, and Darnold.
I know it's a new system, but running back situation is going to be. You don't have one workhorse you can just toss it to. So he does that. He's cleaner, cuts down on the mistakes, more efficient.
That's definitely another side of this argument of what if he continues to progress.
Yeah.
Because he's only like 29 years old, too. Yeah. That's the thing. It's not he's 35, 36 years old, and you're worried about paying a guy that's too old.
But he does that and is consistent week to week, is clutch in big games the way he was late in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Now
it's a no-brainer.
Now the Seahawks are like, okay, let's get you a deal before the third year expires.
Right.
We're willing to do. We're going to guarantee your third year on this deal. We're going to guarantee the first 2 years and give you another three-year deal.
Right.
Yeah.
Definitely said the other side of that coin, man. Witherspoon got paid. He deserves it. Defense is going to be great for Seattle. McDonald, I did enjoy him showing the true psychotic nature of himself, complaining about his team's preseason, the standard, we weren't up to
operation. That's what you want. I didn't play any of my guys, but
let's hold these guys accountable.
Now I can ride these, because if they expect him, he can come with it. If you expect to make the roster putting this on tape, you've got another thing coming, and he can.
Drew Locke got the start. They scored a touchdown on their opening drive of the game and then did not score the rest of the game. Milroe ran around, used his legs a little bit. But I love when a coach craps on his team's preseason performance.
They love that.
I'll save Jackson Dart for later. That was in the notes today. We have not talked about Jackson Dart, who got his
that
stuff
I missed entirely.
Rocked in the pocket. He's complaining. Well, maybe we'll see. Maybe at some point we'll get to that today. If not, we can kick that to tomorrow. One last note, though, and it ties in locally. I thought it was interesting. We talked about him on Friday because he played on Thursday night in the preseason, and he's looked good. Malik Benson is now to the point in Vegas where he's earning first-team reps for the Raiders. That's how good his camp's gone. So a hell of a story, man, for a guy who had it's interesting when you go back and look at his college numbers and then think about what was said when he transferred, myself included. I remember when he committed to Oregon, it was like, who? Huh? And you look up his numbers, it's like, I don't know, like 10 catches for 200 yards. You're like, that's all he's got in his career? It's a highly touted kid, never really put it together. And then it just kind of popped for him late in the year, off to a great start in camp. And now the way he's playing, he's now earning first-team reps for the Raiders. So really cool to see Malik Benson doing that. And Vegas and him and Mendoza might become a nice little tandem down there in Vegas. Let's head down to Corvallis, shall we? Ryan Harlan's going to join us, and he's on BeaversEdge.com, covers the Beavs. What's going on in camp? They had a player arrested. Two guys rejoined the team. What's the sentiment going into their Houston opener? We haven't done an Oregon State check-in in a while. Figured it'd be a good day for that. We'll do that. Ryan Harlan next on 105.1 The Fan. All right, welcome back in. 8:43. Happy Monday morning, everybody. We did a little check-in with Oregon earlier. They had their first scrimmage of fall camp and gave you some tidbits from that. Stuff we know. Let's go to Corvallis, shall we? They had quite an eventful weekend with players getting arrested, other guys joining the team and all that. Lots going on down in Corvallis. We're getting closer to their opener against Houston here in a couple of days. And joining us now is friend of the program, Ryan Harlan, covers Beavers for Beavers Edge. And you can follow him on Twitter at Ryan_Harlan7. Ryan, good morning to you, man. Thanks for the time. I'm just curious, when you see the announcement, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe he's still at practice, but Aiden Sullivan, expected to be a big impact guy for Oregon State this year, gets arrested. He's still with the team. What do we know, and what is the impact of that so far down at Oregon State camp?
Yeah, appreciate you having me on, Dirt, and good morning to you as well. When I saw that announcement, that kind of brought up shades of last year to a degree, with Exodus Ayers being arrested right around the start of, before the season.
Right.
And to me, that was something where it's like, you know, first year kind of head coach and Jamarcus Shepherd, how he handles this, I think, is going to be really telling and really kind of, set the tone for what he has said the standard is of this program. And really, it's a lot of incomplete information, but it sounds like it happened to be a bar fight. along Monroe, and really just more of the details are unclear exactly what led up to it. But definitely some liquid courage was involved and things went a little bit too far.
Yeah.
In that regard, I don't expect Aiden to be available for Houston, just kind of with the timing of everything. But, you know, we're going to talk to Shep more today and kind of learn exactly more details and see what he has to say on the matter.
Okay. The bar fight stuff, and then his attorney's coming out saying, you know, this isn't the complete picture. Like, there is a tricky balance here of, like, we got to let due process play out. Just because you're arrested doesn't mean you're guilty. Just because you're charged or something doesn't mean you're guilty. And so that's to your point, it's kind of a tough spot. We'll see how Shepard handles that and how that plays out in the coming weeks. He is still practicing. Now, let's go away from the bad to the good. The idea of Jaheim Patterson and Van Wells being back at practice, how big of an impact is that?
Oh, that is really big, especially along the offensive line, having Van Wells back. I would argue that the offensive line is one of the areas of this team that's kind of a lot of questions surround it. There are a few guys that do return in Nathan Elu and Tyler Bolton that you could pencil in to start on the offensive line, but I think that's really big to have Van Wells back in that room. Jaheim is also a big, you know, kind of addition to the secondary room because they went out and added Marquise Raspberry from the Division II.
Wait, is that a real name? His last name's Raspberry?
Yes, his last name is Raspberry.
That's fantastic.
But for depth purposes, right?
Yeah.
Like, and really that's something there too, where I think they're, you know, when injuries do happen to the room, because for Oregon State the past couple of years, injuries have hit that secondary room pretty hard, and having Jaheim, I think, is also really big into that room in addition. But I would say Van Wells is arguably, you know, the more significant of the two. And I think a lot more people are a little more comfortable with Van coming back and being able to kind of step right back into that center role. Now, for Carter Gilliam, a new addition coming in over from Louisville, I think he kicks over to guard most likely, but he's been repping at center pretty exclusively throughout most of spring and then kind of in the early goings of fall camp before Van Wells and Jaheim Patterson officially rejoin the team. They did practice last week. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they participated in the scrimmage.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we weren't allowed to see anything as media for the scrimmage this time around compared to previous years, but they're back practicing officially.
Okay, yeah, they've got to run these things like a CIA black ops side. We're not allowed in. Nobody can get any information. We heard that Shepard wasn't even willing to give Phil Steele the two deep. Like, I'm not even giving you a depth chart, man. Turn on the game and figure it out with the rest of us. Hey, whatever works, whatever you got to do. Ryan Harlan, our guest, BeaversEdge.com, the Beavers Edge podcast. Go check that out as well. And you can give him a follow on Twitter at Ryan_Harlan7, covering Oregon State. I'm curious to ask you, man, like, the Shepard comments went viral, was a week or two ago, where they did their little kind of makeshift media day, and he says, guys, you got to be patient with me. There's going to be ups and downs, and he's kind of hitting on this message. My takeaway was, I think it's a coach who looks at his first two games and understands Houston might be a playoff contender. Texas Tech is a favorite to win the Big 12 and was in the college football playoff last year. And then it's going to get easier from there. Sounds like a Boise State game. Like, everything else on their schedule is manageable. That was my kind of take. As somebody who covers the program, been around it a long time, and is an alum of Oregon State, what was your reaction to Shepard saying, hey, guys, bear with me, there's going to be some ups and downs?
For me, to be quite honest, I think a lot of people read too much into his comments early on. And also, I looked at it as, this is a rebuilding football team coming into his first year. Like, there's going to be adversity. To say that there isn't going to be any adversity, I think that's just lying to everybody, right? Like, I'd rather have it straight from the coach's mouth and be honest and say, hey, look, this year is going to be tough, but at the same time, we need you to show up, show out. Like, Shep has said that, you know, even with his full team out there, there won't be a full team out there because the crowd is a part of that. So getting people into the stands at Research Stadium, I think, is going to be a really big factor for this year and generating that excitement, because after last year, I don't fault fans for, you know, being apprehensive and unsure of what this year is going to bring, right? With so many moving new parts, new players, new pieces, there's a lot of turnover, and you know, you're kind of wondering what's going to happen and where is the excitement to, you know, go back to a game and sit there and watch Oregon State. Right. So for me, I looked at it as, I think it's just Shepherd shooting straight from the hip. Like, that's about what this year is going to be. I think, you know, outside of probably those three games that you mentioned, the rest are kind of toss-ups, with the exception of a UTEP or a Montana on the schedule. But like, if you can make it fun, if you can make it exciting, regardless, I think, of what the outcome is, what the record is at the end of the year, I think you're going to be able to bring in a lot more people back into Research Stadium and kind of generate that excitement that's been lost for the past couple of years, going through the collapse of the Pac-12 as we know it, to the kind of weird pseudo partnership with the Mountain West, to this kind of weird quasi-independent thing that you were doing last year, right? Like, I think that's just where I kind of look at it as a, this is what the year is going to be. We need you to, guys, as fans, to come up to Corvallis and show out. And we're going to keep building something until we get it right.
Yeah, that crowd, I would imagine, for that home opener against Texas Tech should be, I mean, it's hard to top, you know, opening against a playoff team, all the controversy around Tech this offseason and them being a lightning rod and all that. Like, I'd imagine that's a great atmosphere in Corvallis. I would hope so, at least, for game one at home of the Shepherd era. They bring in Malik Murphy a year ago, and I remember, you know, that news kind of surprised a lot of people. This guy was a starter in the ACC. His numbers were fine. Duke moved on from him. They upgraded a quarterback, to be fair, because Mensah was really good. He comes in, though, and obviously was underwhelming on the year. 9 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Surprised that he stuck around, but he did stick around. What are we hearing about the quarterback position? Is it his? Is there any competition? And what are the thoughts in a new offense for Malik Murphy if he is the guy?
Yeah, I was actually initially surprised when Murphy elected to stay. That even caught me off guard, because I think after last year, you know, you wouldn't have blamed him for leaving or finding a new spot. But they bring in two new quarterbacks in Brady Jones from Western Michigan and Braden Atkinson, Jerry Rice Award winner from Mercer this past season. My thoughts on the quarterback room are, I think it's Malik Murphy's job to lose, being the incumbent in the room, and they're making it a true quarterback competition. We're going to get a little more clarity from Shepherd on how each of the quarterbacks looked, but I think this quarterback battle goes until the 11th hour, right about up until game week, week one against Houston. It's still kind of close. To me, Brady Jones has had some good moments in practices from what we've been able to gather from what the coaches have said. Braden Atkinson as well, too, has had some good moments. Malik has also had some good moments. It's still really close, at least from my gauge on the room as a whole, but I wouldn't be surprised if this goes like until the very end and we really don't know who's going to be out there at quarterback until, you know, you flip on the game and you see whichever of the three, right? Like, that's at least how I look at it, but I think it's Malik Murphy's job to lose.
Okay. Last one I got for you, Ryan. Great stuff, man. It's been good to get some insight on what's going on in Corvallis. When it's always hard, and this is a difficult question to answer because, you know, everybody's shutting down access, and it's not like you're there jotting down notes every day of like, ooh, that was a nice play. Let's remind that. But as you like, you can get little tidbits and hear things. Like, I think one of the difficult things Oregon State fans have had the last couple of years, I would imagine, is like there's so many new names, and it takes a while to learn those new names, and then some guys enter the portal at the end of the year, and it's like you're learning a new roster. So of the new names, any that are getting, you know, uttered after practice of like, man, that guy's looking good, or this guy's making plays, like anybody that's standing out in terms of what you're hearing that fans will maybe start learning in that Houston game and then going forward?
I would say that there's a lot, and I'll try to keep it as condensed as possible, but Kai Wheaton has definitely stood out.
Yeah.
Jesse Legree also has really stood out too in the wide receiver room. He's a guy that the coaches have been really high on throughout the course of spring. AJ Newberry, the transfer from Vanderbilt as well too. I think he probably ends up in kind of a 1A, 1B situation in that running back room in that tandem with Cornell Hatcher. And then really also Dylan Lane, the local kid. Yeah. He's really gotten the praise of the coaching staff and Shepherd. For a guy kind of coming into a new spot, he's gotten himself on the leadership council that they have on the team pretty quickly. Like, the players voted him on really quickly. And I think that really just kind of says a lot about not only what he's done so far in practice, but also too of just how he is as a teammate in the locker room. Those are a few that kind of really kind of jump out to me as guys to watch out for. Definitely expect freshmen to have a big role in Shepherd's kind of first year all across the roster. Like, Shepherd's not afraid of playing some of those guys, and I'd expect Wheaton and also Legree to have a big role. I think Legree might take a little bit of time just because that wide receiver room has been revamped and there's a lot of new names and new faces coming in. But I really like what he brings to the table, and also Kai Wheaton too.
Yeah, first time Wheaton scores. We need to ask Doc Parker, is he going to drop a Wheaton's going to score? Is that going to be in the call when it happens? Or is that that wasn't against Oregon State? You know, like, it's a different rival. You got, everybody hates the Huskies together, right? Great stuff, dude. Ryan Harlan, Beaver's Edge. Go get him a follow on Twitter at Ryan_Harlan7. Oregon State camp in full swing, getting closer to the opener. Appreciate the insight, man, and the time. Let's do it again soon.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on, Dirt. Thank you so much.
There you go. Ryan Harlan, a Beaver's Edge. Really good stuff. It's hard to get people on the ground who are plugged in and day out with Oregon State. And there's very similar to Oregon now, where it's like a, you know, it's a military secret launch code practice, and so nobody's allowed any sort of access or insight. But I thought that was pretty good. That was good stuff, man. I don't know. Have we ever had Ryan on? Is that the first time?
First time
I can
recall.
Did we just pop our cherry with Ryan? That was a cherry popper? Let's do it again soon. He was good. That was really good stuff from him. Check out his work, Beaver's Edge. And good insight on Oregon State. Let's get to, it is the final hour of the radio program. Hello, everybody. The AP poll's about to get released. Let's yell about that. Where's my team ranked? Where's everybody ranked? The teams who are most likely to fall into this category this year, I'll remind you who they were last year. And then who is most likely to end this drought? We got a lot to get to and some fun with audio. It's a loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague, 105.1 FM The Fan.